And in a moment, you're going to meet the newest member of the Coast to Coast team, our new investigative reporter. This person will appear monthly on the program, and eventually in another couple months, we'll expand from a couple hours tonight to a three-hour program as well. So we will be back to introduce you to the newest member of the Coast to Coast team in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, and we're going to introduce you now to our newest member of our Coast to Coast team. This person is known for breaking ground as a news anchor and meteorologist for major markets and cutting-edge networks, CNN and the Weather Channel. This person's face and voice became familiar to viewers in millions of homes through this person's primetime broadcast throughout the U.S. and around the world. As a journalist with a nose for news and stories behind the headlines, our investigative reporter has worked in multiple markets in various capacities with a curious interest, whether it's hard news, controversies, conspiracies, or the mysteries and unexplained. This person is uniquely distinguished as the only television broadcaster to be both a news anchor and degreed meteorologist at the network level. It is my honor and privilege to welcome to the team Cheryl Jones. Cheryl, welcome. It's good to have you with us.
Thank you, George. I'm so happy to be here with you and the Coast family and all of the Coast listeners.
Looking forward to a long future with you on the program, because not only have you covered hard news in your career, but you've really got a sense for the unusual and the bizarre, many of the things we do on this program.
That's correct. Odd that I started out in mainstream news, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And eventually your program, which is going to be 2 hours for a couple months, will expand to 3 hours. And we'll take calls with you next hour, of course. And you've got two great programs for us coming up. Why don't you tell us about the first one?
Okay, George, this is a story many will find hard to believe, and even for paranormal researcher and investigator Terry Lynn Keel, this is her first time to talk publicly about a most unlikely healing in a truly bizarre way. It's an alien healing, her true story of a malevolent extraterrestrial, all linked up on the Coast website. Terry is an author. She writes true short stories of strange happenings and occurrences with non-human entities, including UFOs, extraterrestrials, angels, and other unusual creatures. She blends her two passions, the paranormal and spiritual, as host of the internet show Enigmatic Anomalies. In this very personal conversation, Terry told me what happened to her and that she was afraid to tell anyone about it and has kept this to herself in private for many years until now.
Let's listen.
I think you'll understand why.
I'm not looking for
her to this. Describe this alien encounter.
Okay.
Listen now to her conversation.
Terry, I read your story in your new ebook. It's very compelling, unlike anything I've ever heard of. You say from a very young age, for as long as you can remember, your life has been inundated with a myriad of strange and anomalous experiences. And for you, this is the first time to talk publicly about it. I've followed your life story and known you to be a very grounded person, not given to drama or composition of something that truly did not happen to you. This is a most bizarre event, though, an encounter with an alien. You say the event not only changed your whole worldview as you knew it, but miraculously freed you from a long-time chronic pain. Can you set the stage for our Coast listeners and tell us a little about yourself, your situation with that pain?
Sure, and thank you for having me on tonight. I am the Director of Memberships with MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, and I'm also on the Board of Directors. And to tell you a little bit about the pain that I've experienced, I was in a constant ache in my lower right abdomen area for about 12 years after my subtotal colectomy from 2000. So it was definitely something that couldn't be ignored. It was something I constantly felt.
So after years of pain that never went away after your surgery, what happened with the alien?
Well, it truly was bizarre. I was awakened by hearing my name being called in the middle of the night, and I rolled over to see who was calling my name. And when I did, I really just had the shock of seeing a very strange looking, short, but rather colorful orange, yellow, and red scaled reptilian extraterrestrial standing about only 4 feet tall right next to the side of my bed. And I was somewhat in shock for sure because of his overwhelming presence and that he just wasn't like anything I'd ever heard a reptilian entity should look like. But I'm thinking he could have been some type of a reptilian hybrid. As he stood there right next to my side of the bed, I was truly stunned and really could not help but notice the fact that he had no mouth and two very large eyes on his head. And I was completely entranced by this. I was staring into his dark, slanted black eyes, and I couldn't take my focus off of him.
Did the alien communicate with you in any way at all?
He was staring very intently at me, and I heard him speak to me. And what he said was, "Be still," and it was definitely in a male voice. And that's important for me to mention because it wasn't female or light. It was very distinctively male. And he was just very odd looking, had very strange fingers. They were wrapped tight together, holding a Y-shaped, like a surgical instrument, but it was not a surgical instrument. It was like nothing I had ever seen in the medical journals or history, any instruments like that ever.
How is it different from a normal surgical tool?
It was like it was a living biological wand of some sort, but definitely in that Y shape with the two separate pieces at the top. And he held one a little bit higher than the other, so I was kind of staring at them. And the one prong on the bottom was real tightly curled, like you would see in nature in a fern, like a stem, you know. And the other one was very much like an octopus's tentacle, because it was, although they were both thin, they had very distinct separate look to them. But yet they were attached on this one straight arm of the Y. Then he pressed this onto me, and I felt this curled, pronged, biological gray, it was also gray, I don't know if I mentioned that, unwrapping itself and wrapping itself around this area in my lower right abdomen where my pain was centered. You really would have to read the book, An Alien Healing, to get the whole picture of this. But it was very warm and tingly, and it was tightening and squeezing around that exact area that had this pain that I had been experiencing for so long.
Did this living biological-like wand he was using cause even more pain?
I felt no pain from it tightening, which I thought was kind of weird. I kept thinking, oh, I'm going to feel it. it's going to hurt, but it never did. And the other part of the wand attached itself to me and was firmly held in place with that little suction head because it was very much like an octopus tentacle. So the next thing I remember, I was opening my eyes because I was squeezing them tight thinking, oh, this is maybe going to hurt. And it never did. And when I opened my eyes, he was gone. I don't remember seeing how he left. I didn't hear a single thing. He was gone, wand and all. And now I was wide awake. And that is what happened. And then as I moved throughout that moment, I wasn't in pain anymore. I started realizing, wow, there's no pain.
Why do you think the alien was specifically a form of a reptilian hybrid, as you said in your ebook?
Well, I have seen different types of extraterrestrials in my experiences, and he was like none other that I had seen, except I had seen a reptilian. And so this reminded me of that particular species, but nothing was the same. They looked similar, but they were very different in size and shape, and this one had scales, the other one did not. So it was similar, and that's why I thought it could be some type of a hybrid.
You say you've been the subject of visitations from aliens for many years. Why do you think you were chosen for this and would draw this healing alien to you specifically?
Well, I think they want us to know that they are benevolent, that they are not malevolent. And I do believe that it was for now. And all of a sudden, I felt led to share this. It's been 7 years, and I haven't even talked about it. Just very, very briefly to maybe a handful of people. And no one, by the way, has ever really come back and said, oh, yeah, you know, this other person writes about it or talks about it. Nobody ever said that. But I think that I was chosen for this for now, and that's why I'm doing it now.
Do you think there was a message they wanted to convey through you, perhaps regarding advanced medical technology mankind is not yet utilizing?
Well, I do. I think that we need to know, we have the right to know, and they want us to know that they have been created with talents and gifts just as we humans are. We're not all equal. We all do very different things, and some of us to a greater or lesser degree, and so do they. And some of them can do healing, and they want us to know that this is an advanced form of technology that we are not utilizing. And yet, I don't know if they're telling us that we can or they can assist, but the wand I saw was beyond anything in all the years of medicine that I know of.
There's several different layers, mindsets, if you will, planes of existence to all of this, physical, spiritual, mental, dimensional. Do you feel any conflict between your own spiritual, paranormal, and scientific belief systems?
No. My belief system is not exactly the same as anybody else's because our beliefs are all based on personal experiences, I believe. And being a Christian, my belief system has been so deepened by knowing that there's so much more that we're not being taught, we're not being shown in the lines of truth. We're getting a lot of things from pulpits, but we're not getting the whole story. And so much of it always boggled my mind, but now it makes perfect sense as I look at it from knowing what I know today. And spiritually, I can say the same, and through the paranormal realm as well.
You kept this private for so many years and say you were hesitant and afraid to tell anyone about it. Why did you decide to write about it now, to talk with me and share this amazing story with our Coast audience tonight?
I really believe that now is the time. We're starting to move so much past, you know, sightings and seeing UFOs. And now we're looking at introducing ourselves and being introduced to extraterrestrial species that are interacting with us and, by the way, have been for centuries, decades. And it's about time. And they have impressioned me to know that. I really believe that now is the time. So it's for us and our need to know the truth now.
Aside from the freedom from pain, you said after the alien encounter and your miraculous healing that you can never be the same person again. How has it changed you otherwise?
Well, it's really opened my mind and helped me to understand we are not alone, we have never been alone, and we never will be alone, and that we're spiritual beings on a human journey, yet there's all these other dimensions that we interact with, and it's just opened my mind to the truth of who we as human beings really are.
Where can our Coast audience find your ebook and learn more about your story and your work?
Okay. The ebook is An Alien Healing on Amazon.com. And you can also reach me at terryling.com, TerryLynge.com.
Great. You've definitely covered all the bases. You're going to be very hard to miss. Thank you so much, Terry, for bravely sharing your most compelling story for the first time here with me and with our Coast audience.
Thank you so much for having me, Cheryl, tonight. It's truly my honor to be here with you.
Cheryl, it's been our pleasure.
We've got some great pictures of what she supplied on the coasttocoastam.com carousel reel. She's a
yes, we
great
do.
Story.
Those are wonderful. About the, it shows the alien as well as the biological wand or renditions of these that she has described in her story.
What did you think of her?
Oh, I thought she was amazing. I thought that at first it's an unbelievable story, but she has such a strong background and a strong history and is such a grounded person. And the more you look into it, the more you start to find other stories out there and things that could very well be the basis for this. And I've heard of a lot of unbelievable miracles in my life and had a few myself, but I've never heard of anything like this. And George, it just made me think, what if advanced alien technology is really out there and available to us that could heal all human pain? And what if we as humans could learn how to tap into that healing whenever we need it without getting an approval from our insurance?
It would be remarkable, to be sure.
I'll have another conversation with Terry regarding other non-human encounters in a future Coast report.
Super. And since we're starting this relationship with you, Cheryl, for people who want to contact you, what's the best way?
Oh, they can contact me on my website. That's CherylJones.com, and that's spelled with two L's, CHERYLLJONES.com. And there's a convenient little button there that they can email me.
Super. What do you think of the breaking news these days about all these different things, especially being a CNN alumni? You were on CNN when it was a news gathering organization. Now
yes,
it's a lot of commentary.
That seems to be all it is. It's very unusual to look at the way things have developed and what it is now when you just want straight news so you can make your own decisions instead of someone else trying to force their decisions and their twist on a story down your throat. But what's even more troubling to me, George, is that so much of the information that we should be getting seems to be decided by someone else, that we don't need to know everything that's out there. Someone else wants to decide for us. And that's the troubling thing, the censorship that we're seeing today in information.
Say, in the days of, let's say, Walter Cronkite, for example, where he just delivered the news to you as fair and balanced as they could, and then we did make up our own minds. Now you don't know what to believe because you don't know who's trying to slant it.
Yes, and the way the news is presented, it's a panel of people who they seem to be enabling to yell each other down, and in the process, you can't even, in some cases, hear what anyone is saying. And it seems to be that the effort to provoke these debates is the goal of many of the productions of the newscast. And I have to say that it's in the production of the newscast. People complain about what's on the news and this, you know, Trump and this and that. But when it comes right down to it, it is the producers who make the decisions for how and what is going to be on that newscast. And so what we're getting is not because of what the situation really is. What we're getting is the result of what someone is deciding they want us to see. And what bothers me as well sometimes is when the same story is repeated over and over for 24/7 or several days in a row like this, what else are we not finding out about that we need to know about?
Exactly. Now, the stories you're going to be covering for us will be primarily strange, unusual mysteries, conspiracies, and they'll never end, Cheryl. There's just a litany of these kinds of stories.
They will never end, and it's getting stranger every day.
I will probably put you on Wednesday the 30th because the last Thursday, which is going to be your normal time here, is Halloween. So we're going to move you up a day, but we'll have Tom and Lisa get with you on those days.
Okay, that'll be great. Yes, we wouldn't want to interfere with Halloween.
No, that's ghost to ghost night.
That's right.
And then Thursday, and then the following Thanksgiving, we'll have to move you because the Thanksgiving, I think, is the last Thursday in November this year.
Well, the good thing, George, is in the news business, I've worked all over the clock so much that I'm used to being juggled around. So that'll be fine with me.
And December, you'll be on the day after Christmas, so get ready for that one.
I'm used to giving up my holidays as well, so that'll fit right in.
Okay, so when we come back in a moment with Cheryl Jones, she's got another fascinating story, and then in our last hour, we call it Conversations with Cheryl. We're going to take your phone calls with her right here on Coast to Coast AM. And again, her website is her name, two L's, Cheryl, C-H-E-R-Y-L-L Jones.com. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with our new investigative reporter, Cheryl Jones. Cheryl, you knew the late Edgar Mitchell. What a great guy. I miss him.
Oh, yes, I do too. I think he is missed by so many people. Had the opportunity to meet him and talk with him on so many occasions, visit his home, and see his private space museum in his home. He was just such a special person, and he did so much and was never afraid to speak out about what he believed was really going on in space. And that was really remarkable. That was really one of the most astounding situations I encountered with finding out that someone of his stature, when I first started working with UFO conferences, that was just amazing to me. That's really what piqued my interest. There were so many very credible people, and especially with people like Edgar, that were so convinced and never wavered, no matter what the critics said.
And a nice guy.
Oh, so nice. So very nice.
I remember Uri Geller and Dr. Mitchell were both telling me the similar stories where Dr. Mitchell had a tie clasp that was given to him by NASA, and he lost it. He didn't know where it was, and he was having a lunch with Uri Geller, the medium psychic, and it fell out of the ceiling. It came right down, and then a piece of the other tie was in a piece of ice cream that Uri was eating.
Oh, my goodness. I need to have lunch with Uri as
with
well.
Geller and find all your lost things. But anyways.
Yeah, it'd have to be a long lunch.
This next story, if you love history, is a doozy. Go ahead.
Oh, time to saddle up, George. It's the Cowboy Mafia, a new twist on the Old West, if you ever saw one. Just when you thought no one could top the conspiracy theories we have in our news these days, along comes Old West and cowboy historian, author and documentarian Ron Pastore. Tonight, George, for the first time, especially for our Coast audience, Ron unveils not one, but five newly discovered historic photos from the 1800s that literally could change cowboy history, and they're linked up on our Coastal website. It's an astounding photographic puzzle that Ron meticulously pieced together, which uncovers the Wild West just chock full of conspiracy theories with fake deaths, fake names, and secret connections. And it's all between famous gunslingers like Jesse James, Doc Holliday, and Billy the Kid. Ron told me, these old group photos linked together through the years are evidence that his untold stories he's revealing to our Coast audience tonight about the Cowboy Mafia and these new Wild West conspiracy theories are true. Listen in now.
Ron, welcome back to Coast.
Thank you, Cheryl. It's great to be back on with you. You know, I've been a fan for a really long time.
Ron, thank you so much. And tonight, you're sharing with us your latest discovery for the first time right here on Coast. It is a surprising collection of old historic photographs with some pretty intriguing conclusions and connections that you call the Cowboy Mafia. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, I've been doing extensive research on a lot of the Wild West outlaws, and I acquired a pretty tremendous collection of historic outlaw photos. And what I'm finding is I have these group photos of outlaws, and it provides a linkage between different gangs, and they connect with each other over a long period of time. So it appears we have more of an organized crime network that I've coined the Cowboy Mafia.
We have those photos linked up on our Coast website for our listeners to see. Ron, explain how your photos back up your Cowboy Mafia linkage to organized crime.
Okay, well, on Coast to Coast, you can see the main five we're going to talk about today, and they come from my website, which is called Jesse James Photo Album. And what we show is in the early years, probably in Wichita, Kansas, about 1870, we've got the Younger brothers, the Ford brothers, we've got J. Frank Dalton, Jesse James, and Billy the Kid, along with Doc Holliday and Clell Miller, all posing together in one group photograph. It's quite extraordinary.
And so explain to us what we're seeing here on photo number two. It's the Younger brothers, it's Doc Holliday again, Billy the Kid, but they're more or less in the same spots as the first picture, but this is some years later when they appear to be older.
Sure, it appears maybe 3-4 years later, probably still in Wichita because Billy's home was in Wichita at the time. But we see that J. Frank Dalton is not present and we have John Younger. So it gives us a good time frame for the photograph because John Younger was killed by Pinkerton detectives. So here we have the same group of men in basic formation sitting in the same position and having another group photograph taken, which again, I find very extraordinary. And you can tell Doc Holliday, he's more mature now. He has a big handlebar mustache.
And photo number three is quite amazing. Describe this for us. It's a photo of seven people. It's Billy the Kid, his mother, his girlfriend, and his sister.
That's pretty amazing to me. I was trying to figure out who that woman was in the center of the photograph and started looking up census records from New York City before they moved to Indianapolis and then to Wichita, and found that there was a sister named Bridget. And then he has a younger brother named Joseph McCarty as well. So it's quite a revelation in this photograph. We've actually had it professionally appraised by a certified appraiser. So to have one with Billy and his mother and his sister is pretty extraordinary, but his girlfriend's sitting in front of him. And then we have three of the regulators in the photograph as well, his best friend, Dan Dedrick, Dick Brewer, and Chavez y Chavez.
And I see that there's one on the front, Dan Dedrick, who is disguised as a woman. Explain that.
Well, there were arrest warrants out for Billy and his buddies, the regulators, because the establishment, the rule of law at the time was very corrupt, and they had made Billy and his buddies the bad guys, even though they were duly sworn officers executing warrants for the arrest of murderers. And so Dan, not wanting to be embroiled in that mess and become a wanted suspect himself, no doubt took on a disguise to come and visit from Arizona.
Wow, that photograph is amazing and quite surprising. What are your plans for it?
Well, yeah, this will be great subject matter for a documentary on the authentication process for historical photos. And what I'm doing is developing a new criteria for authentication, because for some reason in collectibles, you just need experts to tell what exactly an item is, Lily, glass, Tiffany, jewelry, or something along that line. Even if it's not signed, they can tell who the manufacturer was. But when it comes to photograph, they require provenance, a clear chain of custody. And that's not really possible anymore, as people are passing these through estates and, you know, the heirs don't know exactly what they have. And someone comes along later and says, by gosh, that looks like so-and-so. And I get so many requests from people wanting to authenticate their photos. So we're trying to establish a new criteria, put this all in the form of a documentary, and then have this photo be the test subject for that documentary, following it all the way through to auction.
How did you develop this eye for picking out these features that allow you to put the pieces of the puzzle together like this?
Myself, over the years, I've developed the eye for facial recognition, taking each individual nuance of a person's face, and using Billy the Kid as a test subject here, have come up with 24 photographs of him on the website that progress from his early years to his old age.
Let's go to number four. Photograph number four with Billy the Kid and the Wild Bunch Gang. There is Butch Cassidy. There's Pat Garrett. The interesting thing here, one of the interesting things, is that it appears that some people who were thought to have been dead at one time keep showing up in photographs. Explain what we're looking at here.
Sure. Namely, Billy the Kid, right? We're looking at a photo that's probably well past the 1881 alleged date of the killing of Billy the Kid, who allegedly was killed by Pat Garrett. But yet here they sit in the photograph right off to the left front side of the picture. Then you've got Butch Cassidy and Sundance and the Wild Bunch. You know, I mean, it's just a remarkable photo. What brought all these guys together? And so I've done some research, and I figure they're probably in the Folsom, New Mexico area. But look at this photo. They're all wearing fine suits. They're all wearing these derby bowler hats. And, you know, it looks more like a gang of Pinkerton detectives than wanted outlaws.
Now let's go to photo number five, Billy and the Wild Bunch Gang again here some years later, and it appears that they're sitting on a cliff. They have canes, walking sticks, some of them, and they're wearing hats. So this is much the same group as we just talked about in the previous photograph.
Exactly. Same 10 guys. They're sitting at the foot of the Capitan Volcano near Folsom, New Mexico. Black Jack Ketchum is sitting right in the middle of the photograph, and he's actually arrested for robbing the train at Folsom, New Mexico in about 1898. So we would think it's right about the same time of this photograph. We have Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid sitting together again. There's a distinct facial wrinkling and weathering in the face of Billy the Kid. Now, he's got to be 40, 45 years old at this point. So I'd say that he's gotten over being murdered by Pat Garrett, and they've stayed buddies the whole time. So not long after this, we've got the Butch Cassidy and Sundance will allegedly go to Bolivia and get killed. But there's extensive stories of them showing up in America again after that. His sister and at a place, you know, all of these people have testified that they were not killed in Bolivia. So the photo is seeing all of them dressed almost exactly the same now in dark suits and the dark derby bolo hats. As you said, they're holding walking sticks and they've got some kind of ribbon on their lapel, like they're there for a function, for a reason of some kind. So it was an organized event. Clearly, they're all dressed the same, so they appear to be an organized group, and they're criminals, so we'll call this organized crime.
Ron, in looking back at all of this, seeing these famous cowboys, gunslingers, reconvening through the years in such a large group, and they're all in each photograph dressed in a similar fashion, what do you take away from all of this?
Well, I think you have to realize, first of all, there was a very thin line between law enforcement and outlaw at the time. And Folsom, New Mexico became the nexus for this as these gentlemen all arrived there to become employed for enforcement agents for the cattle barons who were engaged in these range wars. So whether it was Pat Garrett as a cop or Billy the Kid next to him as an outlaw, a regulator, or whatever hat he happened to be wearing, you know, we see now that there's this constant connection between these organized groups of criminals and that it evolves into something much larger or has been evolving over the decades, you know, as we see the photos. And no doubt this was the early seeds of organized crime in the form of a cowboy mafia.
And this appears to be the kind of stuff that could actually change history.
I won't hold my breath on that one, Cheryl, but, you know, I've been doing Wild West history and exhuming bodies and providing DNA tests, and still people doubt that Jesse James faked his death. And now we see through these photos that Billy is appearing repeatedly, and he faked his death, obviously. So let's just see how well that hits with historians.
So what's next for your collection and discoveries?
We are working on development of a number of different documentary shows, perhaps even a series. So that's really exciting and hope to do more television.
And again, where can our listeners find the body of your work?
Well, you have this great collection of photographs, which they feature several hundred of my original tintypes and cowboy outlaw photos at jessejamesphotoalbum.com. You can read the forensics report on Jesse James and the DNA testing that we've done on academia.com. And of course, I have a book out. Then we have, you know, new programs and documentaries in the works all the time, being out in the field treasure hunting, just so much going on. So stay tuned and we'll bring you more.
Thank you so much, Ron, for being here with us tonight and for sharing these photos with us here on Coast for the first time publicly. Thank you very much for doing that for our listeners.
Thank you so much and all my best to the whole Coast family. Look forward to next time.
Well, we crushed his website, Cheryl, so those pictures will pop back up soon enough, but we slammed the poor guy.
Wow.
we do that to a lot of people.
Oh, I know. I mean, it's such an amazing story, so sometimes the websites just get overwhelmed with all the response.
He got into this in a big way, and he never stopped, did he?
Oh, and he's still going. I mean, who knows if he's going to be exhuming the body of Billy the Kid now that all of this has come up. And there you have it all, George. Dead men don't lie when they leave such group photos behind like this with someone like historian Ron Pastore hot on the trail. And they didn't even have social media back then to help them organize all these group photos. And they had so many fake names. I don't even know how they kept up with themselves. And the other thing is that these group photos specifically create so many new questions and conspiracy theories that will require some deep research. I mean, did Sheriff Pat Garrett really kill Billy the Kid? If not, who was really killed? And it'll be fascinating to see what happens with that odd cowboy mafia photo number 3 as I follow it through auction in the months ahead.
What's amazing, too, is his perseverance. He doesn't give up. He goes after these stories, and he does whatever he has to do. I mean, how many people get permission to go dig up graves like this?
Absolutely. And these photographs he had for a long time and just thought they were photographs of old photographs. And then when he started into his analysis with the facial recognition and then started breaking each piece of the face down and each part of the photograph piece by piece and analyzing it separately and then started putting this puzzle together, then it all came together. And that's why now
all of this is coming out from Ron Pastore's investigations and discoveries.
Well, as soon as his website clears up again and his server's working, you'll be able to see the pictures that he supplied for us that we've linked to his website. And they are remarkable, considering how many years ago.
Number three is the strangest of the strange.
Yeah, they're all something else. Cheryl, we're going to take phone calls with you next hour. We call it Conversations with Cheryl. And these can be questions about news breaking events, the unusual, the paranormal. Of everything paranormal you have investigated or looked at, what is your favorite area? Is it UFOs? Is it ghosts? What would it be?
I'm really torn because I like it all. I do love the UFO area. And, of course, with everything that's happening now and has been happening since December of 2017 with the Pentagon finally admitting that they are seriously investigating. And, of course, along with that big break in the news and the validation that longtime researchers now have, comes a whole new can of worms with so many different theories and angles going on at the same time. So it's really just become the quickening almost.
It's great for us, that's for sure. We're going to come back and take phone calls with Cheryl Jones in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.